Chapter 12. The pirate attack had been a complete surprise, a sure proof that the unscrupulous Hook had conducted it improperly. Poor form. There were often conflicts on the island, surprise attacks and battles. And indeed, by all the unwritten laws of warfare, there was something of the usual procedure to these scrapes. But none quite like this. The Neverlanders, on their part, had implicitly trusted Hook's honor in battle, and their whole action of the night stands out in marked contrast to his, with that alertness of the senses, which is at once the marvel and despair of any foe they encountered. The Neverlanders knew that the pirates were on the island from the moment one of them trod on a dry stick. And in an incredibly short space of time, Hook's forces were being observed by stealthy scouts. The pirates established themselves at the base of a hillock and appeared to prepare to wait until dawn, as expected. Knowing this, many of the tribe folded their blankets around them, sitting in silent preparation for the dawn attack. And in this manner, dreaming of the battle to come, were the Neverlanders found by the treacherous Hook and his dogs. He had not waited till the night was nearly spent, but had unleashed carnage in the darkness. Never before had the Neverlanders encountered such deceit and cowardice. But valiantly they fought back, despite the disservice they had been done. The attack was brutal. Around the brave Tiger Lily were a dozen of her stoutest warriors, and they suddenly saw the perfidious pirates bearing down upon them. They seized their weapons, rallying around the princess. But it was now too late.
To arms, brave warriors. Fight with honor. Strike true.
Dignitas.
Vinit punya.
Vincere aut tamore.
It is no part of ours to describe what was a massacre rather than a fight. Thus perished many of the flowers of the Neverlanders. Not all unavenged did they die. For with Ulmus fell Alf Mason to disturb the Spanish main no more. And among others who bit the dust were George Scowry, Charles Turley, and the Alsatian Fogarty. Turley fell to the blade of Baobab the Great, who ultimately cut a way through the pirates with Tiger Lily and her remaining warriors.
To ground, we must regroup.
To what extent Hook is to blame for his tactics on this occasion is for the historian to decide. Had he waited on the rising ground till the proper hour, he and his men would probably have been butchered. And in judging him, it is only fair to take this into account. What he should perhaps have done was to acquaint his opponents that he proposed to follow a new method. On the other hand, this, as destroying the element of surprise, would have made his strategy of no avail. Ah, me! The whole question is beset with difficulties. One cannot at least withhold a reluctant admiration for the wit that had conceived so bold a scheme, and the deadly genius with which it was carried out. What were his own feelings about himself at that triumphant moment? Elation must have been in his heart. But his face did not reflect it. Ever a dark and solitary enigma, he stood aloof from his followers, in spirit as in substance. The night's work was not yet over, for it was not the Neverlanders he had come out to destroy. They were but the bees to be smoked, so that he should get at the honey. It was Pan he wanted. Pan and Wendy and their band, but chiefly Pan. Peter was such a small boy that one tends to wonder at the man's hatred of him. True, he had flung Hook's arm to the crocodile, but even this, and the increased insecurity of life to which it led, owing to the crocodile's persistence, hardly accounted for a vindictiveness so relentless and malignant. The truth is that there was something about Peter which goaded the pirate captain to frenzy. It was not his courage. It was not his engaging appearance. There is no beating about the bush, for I know quite well what it was, and I really must tell. It was Peter's cockiness. This had got on Hook's nerves. It made his iron claw twitch, and at night it disturbed him like an insect. While Peter lived, the tortured man felt that he was a lion in a cage into which a sparrow had come. The question now was how to get down the trees, or how to get his dogs down. He ran his greedy eyes over them, searching for the thinnest ones. They wriggled uncomfortably, for they knew he would not scruple to ram them down with poles. In the meantime, what of the boys? At the first clang of the weapons, we have seen them turned into stone figures, open-mouthed, all appealing with outstretched arms to Peter. And we return to them as their mouths close and their arms fall to their sides. The pandemonium above has ceased almost as suddenly as it arose, passed like a fierce gust of wind, but they know that in the passing it has determined their fate. Which side had won? The pirates, listening avidly at the mouths of the trees, heard the question put by every boy, and alas, they also heard Peter's answer.
If the Neverlanders have won, they would sound the tympanum and cry out. It is always their sign of victory.
Now Smee had found one such tympanum and was at that moment sitting on it.
You will never hear this sound again.
Strict silence had been enjoined. To Smee's amazement, Hook signed him up to play the tympanum. And slowly there came to Smee an understanding of the dreadful wickedness of the order. Never, probably, had this man admired Hook so much. Twice Smee struck the instrument with his hands, and then stopped to listen gleefully.
There it is! I hear them! A Neverlander victory!
The doomed children answered with a cheer that was music to the black hearts above, and almost immediately they repeated their goodbyes to Peter.
Huzzah, we're going home!
Oh, yes, home. I remember home. Or at least I'm sure I shall when I get there. Farewell, Peter.
Goodbye, Peter. Here is my checkbook to help you remember us.
Don't you dare forget me, Captain.
Or me.
And especially not me.
not that you could. I'm quite unforgettable.
This puzzled the pirates, but all their other feelings were swallowed by a base delight that the enemy were about to come up the trees. They smirked at each other and rubbed their hands. Rapidly and silently, Hook gave his orders.
One man to each tree. And, you scallywags, arrange yourselves in a line 2 yards apart. I intend that you should take them all.
Aye, just so.
Ha,